Hi, I'm Doug Gordon, and you're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. When it comes to film, we always talk about how things look. So it's not surprising that when we discuss our favorite scenes, we talk about the way the actors look, the camera angles, and the art direction. But do we ever talk about listening to a film? Think of the way Orson Welles whispers, "Rosebud," in Citizen Kane, or the masterful way that Walter Murch used sound in Francis Ford Coppola's Apocalypse Now. I love the sound of helicopters in the morning. Our next guest makes the case that sound design is just as important to the success of a film. Mitch Kosten is the producer and director of a documentary called Making Waves, The Art of Cinematic Sound.
I was a sound editor for years in Hollywood. I went to film school, and the last thing I thought I would do coming out of school was sound. Because when I was in school, I didn't relate it to story and character, and I felt like it was more like an engineering thing and technical, and so it kind of put me off. And then I came out of school, and I had everything done, but I had my thesis film left. And a friend of mine who I had cut a student film with had turned into a sound editor, and one day he called me up and said, Midge, none of the union guys will touch this 16-millimeter film that came in, but it was with a big producer. So he said, if you come in, I'll show you how to cut effects. And as I tell my students, you know, I lowered myself and took a sound job because I needed the money to finish my thesis.
Right.
And then here I am on the show, and it's like I'm the only effects editor, so I'm like, oh my God, I got to set this mood and the tone. I've got to figure out, like, how do I even think about sound with character? And, you know, and at least I had learned in film school I would be responsible to break down those sounds. But I had just never really gone into detail in sound at school. Right from that very first show, I started to realize how much you add to the movie. And then that editor called me up one day and said, he was going on to work on a TV show. Would I take over on this kind of B movie? Maybe it was a C or D movie. So I said, who's doing the sound? And he said, we don't know yet. And I said, I'll take it if I can be supervising sound editor. And that just like my career, you know, just kind of took off. But also, here's the thing that I learned, Doug, when I was interviewing all these great sound designers, they all at some point had like some kind of tape recorder or something. When I was in fifth grade, for Christmas, I got a little like reel-to-reel tape recorder, and I would do all these shows and record things, and I had to think back to that and think, wow, yeah, I guess it was always kind of sound-oriented.
Yeah. You went on to collaborate on the soundtracks for many filmmakers like John Waters, Crybaby, Kenneth Branagh's film, Dead Again, Tony Scott, Crimson Tide. What is your personal philosophy for what makes good sound design for a film?
It's all about the story. If the director and producers really need to give the sound people enough time, like give somebody a script.
Yeah.
And then you can start thinking about it because, you know, just like the visuals, it's like you're thinking in metaphor. How can you tell this story, reflect character, plot points and everything? And you really need to, you know, think through every frame. And we need to do the same thing with sound.
Yeah. There's this great soundbite from David Lynch near the beginning of your film. He says that
people always talk about the look of a film. They don't talk so much about the sound of a film. But it's equally important, sometimes more important.
Do you think that your film can help to get more people talking about the sound of movies?
Oh, definitely. It's so fun when I run into people now who've seen the movie, and even weeks or months later, they'll say how they're watching films like differently, but also in their lives, they think about sound. And one of my favorite things was coming out of the premiere in LA, and there were these five like law students who were, you know, standing on the sidewalk with one of our lawyers. And I said, how'd you like the film? And they said, wow, we're just standing here talking about how the traffic is affecting us. But before we saw the movie, we never would have thought like how much it's really affecting how we feel right now.
Yeah. One of the people in your film is Teresa Exton, who worked on the, among other things, the sound effects editing on Steven Spielberg's Saving Private Ryan. What did Teresa tell you about editing sound effects?
Oh, well, she's fantastic. She really thought about the sounds in, you know, in the battle scenes. Like, you're always creating, like, outside the frame. That's really our responsibility. And you really have to work it out. The easy part is almost doing what's on the frame, and then you have to think of where is everything and what would be happening, what would they be listening to? Is it distracting to the story? But Teresa, it was really interesting where she talks about you know, you have to keep that battle alive. But you don't just do it arbitrarily. You really, it's like creating music. Like, there's no mm-hmm. music in those scenes until the end of it. And so she's really creating, like, the rhythm, you know, really like the music to the scene almost.
There's this great clip from Steven Spielberg where he's talking about a particular scene from the opening sequence of Saving Private Ryan.
So I designed a sequence where when an explosion hits near Captain Miller, all the sound goes out. And that came from an actual veteran that told me that was how it affected him. So it put you deep inside his experience.
What the hell do we do now, sir?
One of the things that Spielberg will do is really focus on, you know, something that sound is telling the story. Mm. And so he did this really strong point of view. When you do that, you really focus on what's happening. It's kind of otherworldly. And to hear nothing but to see these horrific sounds, it almost makes it more terrifying.
Yes. One of the pioneers, probably the pioneer of the way sound is used in movies these days, is Walter Murch. Can you talk about how Walter Murch changed the way movies sounded?
Yeah, Walter's so interesting because he wasn't interested in films until really he went to France and then saw the French New Wave films. And he really, I think, took a lot from them. But I would say that what Walter brought is really an awareness about using metaphor. You know, his father was an artist. Mm-hmm. So I feel like he was a painter. And I feel like they got it that he was really interested in sound. And so Walter got this recorder and he just started recording things and then cutting them together and rewinding them and slowing them down and just doing all these interesting things, really creating music out of everyday things. So, you know, George Lucas says Walter Murch was really making soundtracks the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah, and Walter won an Oscar for the sound mix that he did for Francis Ford Coppola's 1979 film, Apocalypse. Now, what innovations did Walter create for the sound design of this film?
Here, Walter, Mark Berger, and Richard Beggs, who are all the mixers on Apocalypse Now, they had only worked on mono films before this. So when you think of the great film, Walter also did the sound on The Godfather. Mm-hmm. When that first came out in theaters, people were hearing that mono. So Francis was in the Philippines shooting Apocalypse Now, and he heard this record by Tomita, and it was a four-track. So he was supposed to sit in the room, have four speakers in each corner, and then listen to this music. And he was so blown away by that, he said to Walter, "I want my movie to sound like this." And they ended up creating what we hear now, which is 5.1 sound. So it's left, center, right, you know, left surround, right surround, and then this boom track. And they essentially created that, which now, you know, 40 years later is the standard, you know, really since like the 80s.
Everything that we see and hear at the beginning of Apocalypse Now is being filtered through the consciousness of Martin Sheen's character, Captain Willard. Can you talk a bit about how this idea plays out on the soundtrack?
Oh, it's so great. So that whole first scene, you think you see, you know, the jungle and it bursts into flames and you hear the doors start, this is the end.
Yeah.
And you're in this room, very, you know, close up of Willard in the room and then in bed, like sleeping. And you think we're in the jungle because of you're hearing the jungle soundtrack.
Yeah.
And then you hear helicopter. But what we're seeing is that it's in sync with the fan over his head. You hear the helicopter kind of going overhead, and just as he gets to the window, and then it passes by, and then you look, and it's like, he goes, oh, Saigon, you know?
Yeah.
And you realize, oh, he's in Saigon. That was all in his head. It's just a beautiful Saigon dance of this whole, you know, what's going on, and really puts us in his head and then brings us right to the present day. Like, when he opens the blinds to look, we also come into, like, oh, it's the city, it's Saigon.
There's this great clip from Walter in which he says that if you run music all the time in a film, it has a cumulatively counterproductive effect, constantly interjecting steroids. But if you want unrelieved tension, don't use any music at all. And that, of course, in your film leads into an exploration of how Alfred Hitchcock didn't use any music at all. Well, just a little bit of source music in The Birds. Can you talk about what Hitchcock did instead?
Oh, yeah. So Hitchcock, he would actually write out kind of a script for each reel, which is what we do. You know, we sit down and do that. So he did that as a director. So what he did was he created the sounds of the birds And it was really the bird sounds that become, just like Music Concrète, you know, become like the soundtrack that scare the hell out of you. That clip that we use where Tippi Hedren's coming into the room, it's so quiet, like you don't even hear the doorknob. I really questioned, oh my God, should we use this? But that's perfect because that's exactly what he wants. It's like you do absolutely no sound, so you're leaning forward, and then she looks up and you hear her breath, and then the wings of the birds come at you, and you're just like, you just want to duck.
You also taught to Ben Burtt, who has worked as a sound designer on the Star Wars film series, the Indiana Jones series, and Ben was creating sound effects in the mid-1970s for the first Star Wars film. How did he create sound effects for things like, say, the Millennium Falcon?
Well, what George Lucas asked and talked to Ben about is that he wanted all real sounds. So Ben was going out and actually recording like jets taking off, and because he wanted that real feel. But he also wanted not everything to sound new, and he definitely didn't want it to sound synthesized like everything was done through kind of creating it. He wanted it to have like a feel too, that there was some age to it, so that you could just hear the engines in it. He would layer things, so he would put things on the synthesizer, so he would record like a regular jet sound, but then it'd have all these other sounds, and sometimes he used his own voice in things, and so he would just layer up things. And also, animals are a big part of what we do. It's like kind of slowed down animal sounds or even reversed or whatever. And in some ways, it's because the animal, you know, is just something that we can relate to as a human being. We don't identify it as part of the soundtrack, but we respond, I think, to it.
Well, animal sounds, appropriately enough, Ben used animal sounds to create the voice for Chewbacca, the Wookiee. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so that's one of my favorite parts in the film, because Richard Anderson, who he was at film school with, and they were good buddies, they went out together to record they tried a lot of different animals, and they were trying to find something that would work, that could also have some variance to it that would sound like it was a language. So one day they recorded this young bear, a cub, named Pooh. The way that they got him to make sounds is that he liked bread dunked in milk or something, and then they'd show it to him, and then he'd want it, and then he'd kind of cry out for it, and then they'd give him the bread, and then he'd make these great sounds.
Let's talk a bit about the digital age of sound design for movies. One of the people you talked to is Gary Rydstrom, who's worked on many, many movies, including Toy Story. How has this digital age that we're in now, the computer age, how has that changed the way people like Gary create sound for cinema?
I have to say, when we switched from analog to digital, digital was great because you have so much flexibility. There's so many things you can do, changing pitch, changing, you know, speed, and it's just really working with frequencies. And also you can layer things, so you don't just hear one thing at a time, but you can hear all these things together. And that's really important, not just guessing what will they sound like together, and not waiting to get to the mix stage to mix them together, but really that you can take layers and layers of things, but manipulate them, you know, in so many different ways. And Gary does, I mean, amazing things. The thing is, sometimes it's the simplest thing. Like, I love that in the John Lasseter film, which now has become also the Pixar logo, that light, that sound for it, it's the little, you know, springs, and you could change the pitch on that, and it could make it sound like this little light is happy, and it's this little happy sound, and then it can be sad by the pitch going down at the end. And he just was able to manipulate these sounds in that way and make it, give it a language that we relate to.
Mitch Kostin, thank you very much.
Thank you, Doug. It's been great.
Mitch Kostin on her documentary, Making Waves, The Art of Cinematic Sound. Find out more about Midge and sound in film at wpr.org/beta. That does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, John Hodgman, Sheila Weller, and Mitch Kostin. If you want to hear it again or binge on past episodes, subscribe to the Beta Podcast via Apple Podcasts or wherever you catch your favorite pods. And make sure to let us know what you think by leaving a rating or a comment. You can keep up with us during the week.
All it takes is a phone and an open mind.
Online at WPR.org/beta or on Twitter at WPRBeta.
Why aren't you calling?
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Production. Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
I don't know where you get your delusions, laser brain.
Our executive producer, nay showrunner, is Adam Friedrich.
I don't know who you are or where you came from. From now on, you do as I tell you, okay?
And thanks to you, our alphas. We'll see you next week. I'm Doug Gordon.
Will somebody get this big walking carpet out of my way?